Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, welcome back to the Gear Garage Live Show. This is the show where I answer questions that have been submitted through the week and also questions that you just post in the comments. So if you have questions for me, put them in the comments. We're going to do three things today. First of all is talk about our sponsor, GoRafting.com. And Go Rafting, for those of you that don't know, I've mentioned them before, but I just want to reiterate, they do maps of a bunch of rivers, the classic rivers of the West. And their maps work through an app, which is a separate app. You just get the app. But the Go Rafting, they've categorized all of the rivers. They've done all the mileage guides. They've GPSed everything. They have really good descriptions. And you just get this app called the Far Out app. And it allows you to – sorry, I'm talking while I'm bringing it up right now. I realize I should probably share their website with you. Here we go, GoRafting.com. And so it combines this Far Out app, which is free, with their maps, which are not that expensive. And on the river, you have this amazing map. And it tells you where you are, how far it is to the next camp or rapid. There's good descriptions of the camps. It's just a great asset to have. And so if you were to give me only one choice for a paper map or these, I'm probably going to take these. I know there's downsides, like you have to look at your phone and you could drop your phone in the river. You could lose your battery. I get that there's a lot of downsides. But the fact that they're updatable over time, like when new rapids change, and they're hopefully improved every so often, it's just a sweet way to go. So I highly recommend for those of you who have especially multi-day trips. I kind of not sure how much I feel I want these for day trips. They have a bunch of day trips on there, but the multi-day trips like the Middle Fork, the Grand Canyon, the Rogue, all the overnight stuff, I think this is just like so sweet for. And they had this bundle, which I don't know. I think it's just an insane deal. I don't know. It's not a good business move to sell this cheap. So for $60, you get all the guides for one price. It's $60. It's not even a monthly fee. It's just one time you pay $60 and you get all of these Rogue, Upper Klamath, Middle Fork of the Flathead, you know, like some of these, like the East Glacial. You're probably not going to go do the East Glacial River in Iceland. I doubt somebody's going to use the map for that, but you have it just in case, right? You're probably not going to go do the shot over. You might, but things like the wind, if you're, you know, it's in the U.S. at least, but the overnight trips, the Lower Klamath, the Tuolumne, Gates of Lodore, John Day, East Fork Carson, Desolation, Hells, Maine Salmon, so many, the Gunnison. And I'm pretty sure they're adding more maps as time goes by. So anyway, if you're looking for maps this summer, please check out our sponsor, GoRafting.com. All right, now to questions. And I want to end the show with some thoughts I have about rescue. I've been, it's that season, it's boating season, and it's time, it's like the time that we're running trips and running courses, and I'm getting involved in more and more conversations about rescue. I just want to share some thoughts at the end. Whoa, this is a lot. And by the way, I haven't read these questions yet. I've been kind of out of commission all week, so this is all new to me. I understand that you don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but I'm an avid private boater and search and rescue volunteer, and will be leading an upcoming 2-hour classroom and 8-hour field swift water awareness training session for my search and rescue unit here in Boise, Idaho. Our missions vary from shoreline searching to subject and vehicle recovery out of the Payette River. We're not certified rescuers nor instructors and purposely limit our scope and rely on outside experts to go beyond the basics. So what's your perspective on some basic and practical topics to focus on? You know, I'm not a swiftwater rescue guy. I'm a whitewater rescue guy. And so this is not my... You're asking the wrong person. I don't do search and rescue. I'm not a firefighter. I'm not a police officer. I'm a river guide who does a lot of boating. And so unfortunately, like, it's hard to know what a search and rescue team needs from my perspective. I can't describe it on the computer right now. So, I mean, honestly, I would just go to ChatGPT and type this in. It'd be like, I'm a search and rescue team, and AI can tell you a way better answer than I will, because this just isn't my expertise. Sorry to answer your question that way, but I just don't feel comfortable being able to give you the right curriculum for this. All right. Oh, here we go. Here's a comment. Bought the Grand Canyon. Haven't done the trip yet, but it seems good. Contains info the paper guides don't have. Yeah, I mean, for me, when I told the story a bunch, but we were one day trying to find a camp, and there's no like known cool camp available. But I was looking through the photos of camps when we were in the Grand Canyon, and one photo looked really cool. I'm like, let's go for this camp. This one looks cool. And it was. So it definitely helped me, especially having the photos. You has a bunch of photos, and you can download them to your phone so you can know what things look like, which is kind of cool. Okay. Orphan setup. As a kayaker getting into rafting, I've appreciated your depth analysis of oar tower height and oar length formula. Maybe I missed this episode, but how far apart should any of your oars be? There's a lot of debate on this. I would say, let me see, make myself bigger so it's easier to talk about this. I like it. So my hands are like this. You want to be doing, when you're down low, your hands are like this. Maybe they're touching. Maybe they're almost touching. Maybe they're overlapping a little bit. I'm not going to stress out about that too much. You don't want them out here. You can't row effectively like this. You want them like a push-up. And so when they're here, when you come up here, you're doing an effective push-up. That's where you want them. So people say, oh, you don't want your oars touching. You'll hit your knuckles. Well, you'll hit your knuckles, which you could also not put your knuckles, you know, your thumbs on the outside. You can do that. But also when you're up here, they're probably not going to hit, because you're usually rowing up here, not down here where they're, we know when they're down here, they're out of the water. So I probably didn't make a video about this because the answer is pretty like, it's just pretty close-ish. And I run them overlapping, especially on harder rivers where I need a lot of power. If you can manage overlapping oars, they're so powerful. So I don't mind overlapping at all, but most people will not want overlapping. And most people will, I would say, most people will do an inch or two between just so they don't hit their thumbs, which I don't think is a real epidemic happening, but it might be. I might just be missing it. Okay, back to questions. Whoa. All right. Hopefully that helps. Wing blue color fading issues. I talked to Wing and they said their 5-year environmental testing showed no real fading. They said they're aware of this issue with some boats, but feel it's because they use 303 protection spray. Maybe this helps. Yeah, I mean, we have this problem on one of our wings and we did not use 303. So it's a specific blue color that was a special edition blue. Oh, yeah, I think you mentioned that here. Wait, yeah, blue color fading. We just popped that boat again. Like most of my wings don't get holes, but there's several holes in that boat too. So it teaches me to buy special edition fabrics. I think that's the moral of the story for me. But yeah, we didn't use 303. So that's not definitely not the case for us. What's your opinion of the NRS Longhorn frames? How would it compare to Better Mounts frame? Is there anything better for the cost and the convenience of taking it apart? I love the Longhorn frame. It's not my favorite frame of all time, but it's so simple and adjustable. It's classic. For those of you that don't know what the Longhorn frame is, I'll bring it up. We use tons of these. I own like 20 of them because we have them for our courses. And you know, they're light, they're simple, they're easy to put on. Here we go. Wow, $745. Price has gone up a lot. Holy cow. Let me open up. I have to move this over. Okay, so inflation. I guess that's what's happening. And yeah, it's just a simple frame. Not a lot of bells and whistles. But if you're doing a day trip, this thing is what you want. If you try to do a day trip on the Clackamas with your multi-day 3-bay frame, you're going to be lifting a lot of stuff. So if I was a multi-day person but want to do day trips, I would have to own one of these as well. This, and you could do multi-days with this. It's gonna be harder to, you're not gonna get cute boxes and big coolers and stuff, but you could go backpacker style with this frame and keep it simple. So I'm a huge fan of the NRS Longhorn, but I'm an even bigger fan of the Better Mounts because they're just better. I mean, the name is pretty solid. I have both. I have probably I don't know, maybe 20 is an exaggeration on the NRS ones. I probably have 12 of the NRS ones and probably 5 or 6 of the Better Mount ones. And the Better Mount ones are just, the ore towers are better because there's two little things underneath. You can see there's two underneath, things underneath. And the frames are just lighter. And they glue on whatever these things are, these little things that hook onto the frame. They glue them on. So there's not little bolts sticking out. Just so many intelligent things. So the Better Mounts are, I think, better in every way possible. That's an improvement on what I already think is the best frame. So the, like, not the best frame, but like, it's just a solid frame. It just does the job. If you know, if you switch out, if you're boating with somebody and you want to switch out, you want to change the, where the bar is, it's easy to do. It's not that hard. So I think that these NRS Longhorn frames definitely have a place, but I would choose to go with the Better Mounts because they're just better. It's in the name. All right. Oh, thanks. This is a gift from a good friend. My Mark told me it was a sponsorship. That's what I'm hoping it is. All right, back to questions. All right, topic. Will my pulley eat my hollow block? All right. First off, thanks for all the hard work. Gear Garage and the handpicked products you stock in your shop. I'm appreciative. Thank you. That's super nice. I recently ordered stuff for a Z-Drag kit from you, and it went with a hollow block press deck for my Progress Capture on a Rock Exotica machine pulley. In my testing, I'm finding the pulley finds the hollow block particularly delicious. It eats it every time. I'm wondering if the auto block would mind better. I originally went with the hollow block purely because it felt a little burlier, maybe less likely to damage my static line. Any thoughts you would have would be awesome. Okay, so this is complicated and messy. It depends on your rope diameter too. So whether a pulley eats a prusik depends on the prusik. It depends on the pulley, but also depends on the rope diameter. I have a couple. I have some here that are melted to ropes. I wish I had the prusiks with me, but I'm gonna make myself big. I've melted ropes with both. This is a hollow block. For those who don't know, these are both Sterling products. They're sewn loops, and so the loop is as strong as the prusik. You can see we broke the prusik here, but the sewn loop is still exists. And in this case, I melted to the rope. So this is usually what's going to happen: is the prusik is going to melt to the rope, and I made the rope stiff. It's really cool. This is kind of a cool thing to have. This is the hollow block, which is burlier. And it also, this one melted to this rope. It didn't break. It just melted to the rope, and then we were done with it. And it's stronger than the auto block, and it holds better because it's square-ish. It has like a rectangle. If you guys can see, there's like a rectangle look to it. And this is a great prusik. I just, for whatever reason, like working with this one more. I just like the feel of this one. I tie prusiks better. It just makes more sense to me. This one is, it's a great prusik. It just, you know, I struggle with a little bit. I have heard people say this one gets caught in pulleys more than the auto block. I haven't tested it. I don't believe that because this one's smaller. You think it would, you know, it's like a thinner diameter. So I unfortunately haven't tested that. But the big factor is your rope diameter. What if you have a, you know, pulley? The pulley can handle, like, I think it's 8 to 13 millimeter rope, a huge range of rope. But if you're using like a 9 millimeter rope, it's that pulley's a little bit, it can handle it for sure, but it's gonna suck your prusik in. So I got two pieces of advice for you. One, you can get a little carabiner. I wish I had an example of this, where your two ropes are coming out of your prusik minding pulley. You can get it, buy a little accessory carabiner and put it over those ropes, and it will make anything mind. Hopefully I'm explaining this right. Maybe I can get the whiteboard out. So hopefully you guys can still hear me while I do this. If I have two, so if that's the rope in and the rope out, and let's say there's a prusik, I'll do a carabiner. I know this is like third grade level drawings, but if you can get a small accessory carabiner, you can put it across all of this It has to be the right size accessory cabinet, but if you find the right one, it'll make anything mind. It just takes all the fear away of like things getting locked up in the carabiner. It's just a little hack that works. Oh, look. Mark's talking. You can always put a crab in between your prusik. Mark, are you talking about this? Is you calling it a crab? I'm calling it an accessory carabiner. So that's one solution. The other solution, and Mark, I've been dying to talk to you about this, so get ready for this one. I don't think prusiks mind as well as we've all been promised. I know when I learned to do mechanical advantage a long time ago, you just had a mind. A person did it. A person just, it was part of it. A person had to mind it. And then somewhere I took a class and they're like, oh no, you got to have a prusik minding pulley. The promise of the prusik minding pulley was so cool. You don't have to have somebody minding it because that person minding it is in a line of fire. If something breaks, it's just, it's not the most awesome position. Your fingers can get pinched on something. It's actually kind of a dangerous spot. So pulling out that person for minding the prusik is a good thing. And if it can just use science and math and just a flat end to solve that problem, voila. Well, the downside is, you know, there's always some give. So when you have a person minding it, you get the tension in that and you capture it. When you mind it, the pulley does it, and there's always give. You never get the prusik to match the pulley exactly. So you're always losing some progress. So you get better progress when you have somebody minding the pulley. There's some downsides again, which is not the safest thing to do. You need somebody talented doing it with experience. And you need to make sure your anchor is not going to break and fire back at them. There's several ways you can do that. I'm not going to talk about that now. But I think my thing is, I think you don't need to be super worked up about minding, because you're going to have a system. Maybe your equipment's perfect. Maybe your equipment minds. It's like you bought it. It's like, yeah, my stuff works. But then you go on a trip and you have to use somebody else's equipment. You pull it out, all of a sudden it doesn't mind because they have the wrong size, whatever. Or you have to mix, you're mixing and matching people's gear because of some people have this, some people have that. And so in a perfect world, yeah, they mind great. But in the real world out there, I think we need to have somebody, when I say they mind, your stuff might mind without a person. I think we should probably get back to like hoping they mind, but also recognize they may not. And having somebody there to move the prusik is probably a good idea. I have more thoughts about this, but I'm not going to like dive into it. So I'm going to get back to the answer here. I would say in terms of, so my three answers, just to sum this up, I did see this question ahead of time, so I have thought about it quite a bit, is one, the auto blocks, I just like the auto block more. And so I don't know. I mean, they're not that expensive. The hollow blocks, like 28 bucks or something. Let's look it up. Let's look it up. Like, I think having actually one of each or a couple of each is kind of like having a variety of them is kind of nice. And these prusiks are so sweet because they'll grab onto a large diameter of ropes. If you make your own prusik out of accessory cord, it does not. So the auto block is 18 bucks. The hollow block's 30. So it's quite a bit less expensive. I'm surprised the price is so much different. I didn't really ever track of that before. I knew it was more, but I didn't realize it was that much more. So I would say maybe just try an auto block, but recognize that your rope, I don't know what your rope diameter is. But if you're using a throw bag, it's definitely going to catch in that machine pulley. If you're using a real rescue rope, like a 10, like 11 millimeter, maybe. Yeah. I'd say 11 millimeter, probably 10 millimeters, probably be fine. So it depends on your rescue rope. Think about that little accessory carabiner idea that Mark is calling a crab. And then also just recognize like minding isn't perfect. Like that's just, it just isn't perfect, and it's okay. Cool. Thanks. Hopefully that helped. Yeah. I did see this one that time, so I did have time to think about that one. And that's it for questions. I just want to finish up, like I promised, talk about rescue a little bit. We were involved in like a rescue the other day, and you know, a rescue on a trip is different than like a rescue by firefighters. Usually firefighters are rescuing people who, or search and rescue or whatever, are rescuing people who like they got a phone call, they were sent to a scene. Like it's usually like a kind of a life or death-ish kind of thing. When we're boating, we're there unseen. They could spend a lot more time there. Usually, and some rescues are like immediate, get them out, get their head out of the water. But a lot of the times we're doing rescue, we're just like getting somebody to where they need to be to where they need to be. And in this case, we had somebody stuck in a little pocket eddy on the left. And there were all kinds of like crazy things we could have come up with. We could have rappelled down a cliff. There's so many things involving ropes. We thought about throwing a throw bag over there, but we realized she probably couldn't hold on. We thought about a tension diagonal. We thought about these things, but ultimately like the best solution was just carry a boat upstream a little bit, catch the eddy, get her and paddle out. And I think that's the case for a lot of whitewater rescue, is that it's just literally use your boating skills to solve the problem. Right. And in our whole, this whole debacle, we had a couple flips, and I want to reiterate like how important it is that you can get back on your upside down boat quickly and take care of your upside down boat. Like if you just fall out and let the boat go, that can be a problem, right? Like it, as a person responsible for a boat, you hopefully can get back on your upside down boat. And so in terms of rescue skills, I think what's up, William? In terms of rescue skills, I'm just reminded of that it's just so important being a good boater, just literally being able to catch. We had to go catch like a tiny little eddy, and we had to ferry out above a wall that flips you. So like, you know, just being a good boater is one, being able to self-rescue is another. And then just like not getting caught up in all this rope stuff, like all these techniques we use for ropes, they're techniques, but we could use our rescue our rafts as rescue devices. There's certainly a temptation once you get this rescue equipment to like you get a rescue harness, right? And you want to use it. And I get that temptation because it's new and shiny and it's cool and you paid a bunch of money for it and you want to put it to use. And I think that drives people to use their equipment more than they should. Like I know of an example on the Rogue, because I keep asking people, when has a rescue harness been used to save a person? Just tell me. I want to know. Just on a rafting trip. Not a kayaking trip, rafting trip. The one answer I got was a trip, I think I mentioned this last time, where a boat wasn't tied up and a boat got stuck on some rocks. And instead of paddling another boat out, they put somebody on a rescue harness to go out to get the boat. Right? They probably could have just swam out there, honestly. But like they're using, they've been trained on things and they've been given equipment, and then for some reason they think they need to use it. I've been guilty of this for sure. Like I remember, you know, right after I got a waist belt throw bag, and this is only like, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, the first time I started wearing waist belt throw bags, I wanted to use it. I'm like, I have it on me, let's go. And I used it on the Illinois once that it didn't seem like a bad idea at the time, but it was a mistake. And I look back at like that probably wasn't the right use of a throw bag, but because I just got it and I so practiced with it, I just used it a bunch and I wanted to pull it out of its shiny little holster, you know, and like give it some real use. I did. And I shouldn't have. And I think that's in this case, like we could have there was a solution where somebody swims over there with a rescue harness and grabs her and brings her back, which would have been so much more complicated and could have been bad. Or if she had been wearing a rescue vest, we might have been tempted to send a throw bag over, have her clip on and pull her over, which is not the worst solution. It's probably actually the second best solution, admittedly. But the first best solution was just take, like if she had a rescue vest on, if we could have got a rope over there, had her clip on, we could have probably pendulum her over. It would have been a decent solution, but did we have a boat? And so we just go do the rescue with the boat. And so it's a long way of me saying, I've been thinking about rescue a lot all spring. I've been for the past couple of years. And I think we're too tight. We're too like into like ropes and systems and this and that, when literally we just have to go get people. And being a good boater, having good boating skills, is an important part of rescue that I think is underestimated and under talked about. Those are my thoughts. I'd love to hear comments. Like, put them in the comments. Put them in, you know, I'd love to hear what you all think. This is just, you can probably tell my wheels are kind of go, my brain starts going on things. I'd love to just hear anybody's thoughts about that. If you want to put it in the comments and just have a conversation, or just tell me what you think, because that's how I learn. So that's it for this episode. Probably maybe see you all at the end of next week.